I feel like when it gets to France 98, any time I mention Ronaldo, I should just...
That's good. Or maybe the sound effect that Gary Lineker had could contend with. Oh!
Welcome, everybody, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Hello there.
I am full of energy, vim and vigour today.
Are you?
But it is your turn to lead us through a podcast. So, Addy, do you want to take it away with this week's subject?
Well, let's open with vim and vigour, American style.
Oh, yeehaw!
Yeehaw! Awesome!
Soccer. We've just lost our entire American audience.
Both of them, God.
Both of them, all of them.
So yeah, the 1994 World Cup was hosted finally in America.
Yeah, which we did speak about in the previous podcast about whether it was the lack of footballing heritage. But for a nation as important globally, it is strange that it took them this long to get in on the action.
Absolutely, and they came through in many ways, which we'll mention in the opening kind of stats and stuff. Despite, as you mentioned, football's relative lack of popularity in America in the 90s, in the host nation, the tournament was the most financially successful in World Cup history and still is.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess they've got a huge market to advertise to, haven't
Enormous.
They?
Enormous.
But that is crazy.
But despite the fact that the accusation was, no one's going to watch this, no one's going to care, it also broke tournament records with overall attendance. This is staggering. Overall attendance of 3.5 million people actually going to the games. That is an average of 68,991 per game.
That is impressive. Even in England, you wouldn't necessarily get those capacities. That Absolutely. Is very impressive.
So that is a tournament record to this day.
So is that because... I'm trying to think of the American sport calendar. Obviously, you have Super Bowl start of February, don't you? Mm. So... Like, you're not competing with American football.
No, the only thing it clashed with was baseball.
Right, okay.
Which, actually, interestingly, when I was reading about how they selected some of the stadiums, they avoided stadiums where baseball was in the same city.
Ah, that makes sense.
Or, you know, that kind of thing, because that was the main kind of thing. But largely, the major cities took the... You know, the hosting of the nine cities. And interestingly as well, all of the stadiums, which is a first, all of the stadiums were already built.
Yeah, of course, the infrastructure's already there.
Yeah.
No stories about waiting for earthquakes to come and ruin half-built stadiums.
So that was a major thing, I think, in FIFA having their head turned, because their profit margin could go through the roof. So this was the cheapest World Cup in modern times. To host, coming in at 500 million-ish.
Nowadays, that is an absolute bargain. When you think about Qatar, obviously, it's 2 billion.
You're talking billions normally, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's crazy. They were able to make so much money. US soccer spent only that money preparing and organising for less than the billions of other countries previously spent. And that enabled them to really promote the life out of the tournament, which they did. With some gusto, with those numbers coming in, people who didn't love football or soccer going to watch these games.
Do you think it's a little bit like London 2012, where all of a sudden people that didn't particularly care about the Olympics was like, "Oh, I've just put myself name in the ballot for fencing because you want to be part of it." But I knew people that were like, "Oh, I'm going to go watch handball." It's Definitely, like you've never expressed an interest, you just want to be part of the circus that's come
and
to town.
You're right. Especially if it's a circus, and if they'd hype the life out of it, which they did, you can imagine Americans in particular would be like, "I just want to be a part of it," because it is, they don't know what it is or why it means anything, but it's a World Cup and it's
and they don't want to miss out.
Exactly. So there was that. There was obviously initial controversy about awarding the World Cup to quite a snobby you know, largely European response to a country where football was not nationally a popular sport. And at the time, 1988, when it was awarded, the US no longer had a professional league.
Yeah, of course, because NAS, was it the North American Soccer
North
American
League,
had folded.
It had.
After the years of attracting the likes of Best and Pelé.
And Beckenbauer, So in 84, when attendance faded after the superstars disappeared, the North American Soccer League folded. So amazingly, and still, you know, to this day, it's the only country to host without a professional football league. This, I didn't know this. So one condition FIFA imposed was the creation of a professional football league. Major League Soccer was created as a result of the 94
World Cup. I had no idea about that. That is crazy.
So there you go. So Major League Soccer, legacy. MLS, was founded in 1993. It began operating in 1996 as a direct result of USA hosting the 94
World Cup. Well, that is one of the few things on this podcast where I'm like, well done, FIFA. You actually did your job. If your job is to promote football and use it as a greater force for good.
Didn't just take their money.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably own a share in MLS.
Yeah, sure. That wouldn't surprise
without
me.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there we go. So MLS, which obviously operates today, and it's relatively big in the sense it kind of picks up superstars at the end of their... That's the MLS that you and I
and,
know.
And it's become, not to bore people, but it's so much more of a competitive league than it used to be because of the high-profile arrivals.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not the graveyard it used to be in terms of you will get found out if you go there. You can't be a complete passenger because you do get found out. Like, Pirlo went there at the end of his career for a season, and people started... like mocking him slightly because he was so laissez-faire and like just no effort, and it was a little bit embarrassing.
I mean, he made no effort against England in the World Cup
and still tore us apart.
Yeah. So that might just be Pirlo. But anyway, so that was going on in America. It was a time for change in a lot of things. So the first time the refs didn't wear black in a major tournament, they had options of burgundy, yellow, or silver.
Burgundy? I don't remember that.
So
silver?
There were no black-shirted referees in 94. They did bring it back, FIFA, but interestingly, if you watch 94, you'll see burgundy, yellow, or silver only.
That is glitzy.
It is. I mean, it's American.
Very American, yeah.
So in a World Cup of firsts, also Greece, Nigeria, and Saudi Arabia took part in their first World Cups.
Nice.
Russia also appeared as a separate nation for the first time.
Oh, of course. That makes sense.
After the breakup of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And for the first time since 1938, a unified Germany took place in the tournament.
It's just a feel-good World Cup.
It is, as holders, obviously. Or they were given that title, despite the fact that West Germany had won it in 1990, but they were recognised as defending champions. And largely, the West Germany team was the Germany team.
Sure.
So, also, this was the first World Cup. It's non-stop the first here, mate. The first World Cup since World War II in which none of the UK home nations qualified.
Oh, yeah. That is a great stat, and also a very damning stat.
It is very damning. It was a dark, randomly, after last week's like England fest.
Yeah.
It was a pretty dark time for English football in particular, but also for Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales. None of them qualifying.
Especially Scotland. Like, it's not that far past their, like, not dominance, but like Scotland were a great team in the 80s.
Well, they qualified throughout
The,
you know, 70s, well, 78 onwards for about four or five in a row. And then they went on this
barren spell
of not qualifying. I think they were in the odd one through this period of time now, but it was the first World Cup where 3 points were awarded for a victory.
Yes, I think we'd cover that at the end of last one,
Instead of two, and also the first with a back pass rule.
That would make sense. That
came
was 92.
In 92, that's right. Came in at Euro 92, if you remember our back catalogue.
Yes, that's right.
So that was there in the World Cup. All of that, the 3 points, the back pass rule, all of that was to try and encourage more open attacking play.
Football.
After 1990's average, as we've covered, was quite low.
Yeah, lowest ever.
Yeah, weirdly, it didn't really work. So the average in this World Cup was 2.7 per game.
Right,
Is, you know, wasn't particularly high.
Yeah.
So largely, it didn't really make any difference. And then, interestingly, on the last of the first, because we'll come back to this one, France didn't qualify for the second World Cup in a row. Having been European champions in 84... and then running Brazil close in 86, they then didn't qualify for 1990, didn't qualify for 94.
I've never put two and two together, the fact that it was two in a row, because I knew that France were obviously, they would qualify and not qualify, qualify, not qualify, and we kind of see that over the next couple of tournaments as well.
Yeah.
But, or at least fail in 2002, quite epically, they do qualify, but...
So the end of Maradona.
It's sad, isn't it?
94.
It's sad that we have to cover this.
Yeah, so interestingly, the official reason, I don't know if you're going to be like, he was coked out of his mind, but the official reason for his failed drug tests was weight reduction drugs.
I mean, I'm not saying, because let's say, so I don't have any inside knowledge. I'm not saying that that isn't true.
Whisper, mate?
Just, I don't want to get found out. My sources are very discreet.
A lot of Argentinian listeners.
That's right. I'm not saying he wasn't taking fat burners.
No.
But he was 1,000,000% also taking, again, I'm not saying performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
He is coked off his head. He absolutely is.
I think it might have been a deal that it was like, yeah, this is what you can publish.
Exactly.
This is what you can say. This is, you know, so there's fat burners in my system. There's also everything else.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you. When he scored the goal in 94, which was a great goal.
Yeah, it is.
And he ran towards the camera. He looks like he isn't there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best way of phrasing it. I was going to use literally the same language. Yeah. He's just, the lights are on and no one is home, which is amazing that he scores the goal he does.
I mean, it's a brilliant goal.
And then,
goal.
Yeah, absolutely, he's brilliant. Just vacant.
Yeah, it's a bit random. So anyway, the end of Maradona, it's really the last time we mention him because he just has so little impression on this World Cup. One goal, looks coked out of his mind, and then he just faded away into World Cup obscurity.
Yeah. He could walk through the change room sniffing a line of coke and everyone go, El Diego.
I mean, it's a high possibility he did that.
Yeah, exactly. He could be giving out to his teammates and the manager would just go, yeah, good on you. Cheers. Yeah,
exactly. So, and we got to mention this. This is really sad and dark, but sometimes World Cup covers this kind of thing. Colombia, despite high expectations due to their style and impressive qualifying campaign, failed to advance from the round robin in 94. The team was dogged by influence from betting syndicates, drug cartels, and coach Francisco Maturana receiving death threats over squad selection before the World Cup itself. Yeah. Ultimately, all of that led to this ridiculously sad situation. After scoring an own goal for the United States and effectively eliminating Colombia from the competition, defender Andres Escobar was shot to death outside a bar in Medellin suburb back in Colombia 10 days after their exit from the World Cup. One of the saddest stories I think you will ever come across.
Yeah, and if there are any listeners that don't know that story or want to know, there is an amazing documentary, I think you can find it online for free now, called The Two Escobars, about Andres and about Pablo Escobar, and it goes into detail and kind of explains the whole situation. It's horrific and yet morbidly fascinating to kind of see, like you say, the amount of influence that the drug cartels in particular had on football and on sport.
Well, I guess we've found it a few times, haven't we, with, you think of Mussolini, you think of the Argentina in 78, the dirty war and all the rest of it. You do find this, the World Cup is high profile enough that these outside influences have an interest in it.
Yeah, they're drawn to it.
It's not just sport, it's big money, influence, power, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in this situation, it ended with a tragic loss of life. For what?
I guess a lost bet.
I'm sure what the situation was there, but these big events have thrown up this throughout our kind of discovery of the World Cup, and that continued in 94. To move on from that darkness into ridiculous American light, the opening ceremony.
Here we are, Diana Ross. This is what we've come for. I love it, but I'll let you carry on.
I mean, it's brilliantly American, isn't it? That you think of the 94 World Cup, that's one of the first memories you will, that's it. Not great football, it's not really a World Cup that where you go, that was an unbelievable World Cup.
No, because even the final and the finalists, it's not like, oh, this is the team to watch, we're so excited. It's not. Yeah,
it's
not
quite a forgettable World Cup,
exactly,
in many ways.
And yeah,
other than the outside things that we've kind of talked about, and then this was ridiculous. So the opening ceremony was MC'd, I didn't know this bit, by Oprah Winfrey.
I didn't know that either.
So just before she introduces Diana Ross, she tripped and fell off the platform, which I didn't know. So at that point, might have gone, oh crap, this is going to go badly. But anyway, it was like, don't worry, Diana's here now.
Diana's up
now. If you haven't seen Diana Ross at the USA 94 opening ceremony, it is brilliantly, brilliantly American.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Because it starts so well. She's coming and she's singing.
Yeah. On the pitch, she's down on the pitch, like singing, making her way along, through the pitch.
Yeah, all the dancers' parts, like the part of the Red Sea. Yeah. It's wonderful. Diana Ross looking like $1,000,000.
They tried to Super Bowl it, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Ultimately. It's very much
that's
like
what
that.
They tried to do. So I'll explain. What she had to do was to kick a football, and she's in high heels, but she had to kick a football into a goal, 8 feet in front of her?
Yeah.
10 foot in front of her, maybe?
I don't even think, I might be wrong, I don't even think it's the penalty spot. I think she's
closer. No, it's way closer. Yeah. Which is brilliant, because the director probably went, don't put on the penalty spot, she'll miss.
And again, like, not to mock Diana Ross, who clearly had never before or since kicked a football.
No.
But it's a lightweight football.
Yeah.
And I know, like you say, she's in high heels, and I'm mocking someone that if I was in high heels, I can do it. But you just toe punt it.
Yeah.
You've got, like,
Yeah, well, she swings. She goes for it.
I know. I don't understand.
She goes for top bins without a doubt.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, she goes for top bins. Anyway, the idea was that she would kick the ball in the goal past the goalkeeper, who does the primary school thing where you dive out the way of the ball.
Yeah, classic.
And then the goal would split in half and she'd run through the middle. She kicks it. It goes about 2 foot wide. The keeper looks like an idiot because he's just diving out the way. And Diana Ross just like, carries on singing, running through the middle.
It's the anti-climax because I do understand she has to run through the middle. But part of me is like, whoever's pressing the button to split the goal in half, you kind of don't want to draw attention to it. It's like you almost don't want the goal to explode. You just kind of want her to fight her way through the net.
If you miss this, love, you get stuck.
Exactly. It's like you deserve this. But it's just cringe. Isn't it? It's so cringe.
Dear. Yeah. So that was absolutely brilliant. So with that, it kind of started off a very random and weird, from a football point of view, World Cup.
I can't think of any amazing games, really. I can't think of any players like that really lit up the tournament.
So true. Yeah,
it's so true. Forgettable.
So there's a couple of things that are worth mentioning. So Stoichkov.
Hristo Stoichkov.
He had a good World Cup.
Right.
But I think it was he shone because no one else did type thing. Yeah. Like Bulgaria got to the semis, which is their best result in a World Cup. And they knocked out Germany, which we've mentioned before. They knocked out Germany on the way, which obviously Germany were strong. Mateus, Klinsmann, Bremner, Bremer, they had them all, but they fell foul to Stoichkov and Lechkov, Mr. Island
Peninsula,
pair, with a cracking diving header. And really, if I'm honest, that is, other than the final, which we'll talk about for one particular moment, that's the game I remember, is Bulgaria beating Germany.
Yeah.
I really don't remember kind of engaging.
And especially, I guess, in this country, because England.
Yes, I think that was a big
part
of it.
That's a massive thing of... Okay, I don't really remember much else going on. There was no drama from our point of view.
No, that's true.
And there wasn't enough entertainment to be entertained, really.
It didn't seem that way, no. So, ultimately, what we get to, and we're actually going to cover the final. So, what we get to is Brazil versus Italy. Now, that whets your appetite as a football fan.
Oh, yeah, vintage.
When was the last time Brazil and Italy met in a final? 1970.
Oh, of course, yeah.
The World Cup final. So one of the best World Cup finals ever. And, FIFA delegates and all the rest of it must have been like, fantastic.
We've hit the jackpot.
Absolutely. Brazil-Italy final. Roberto Baggio, Ballon d'Or winner.
Yeah, winner.
FIFA player of the year. Absolutely on one. Unfortunately, he hadn't had a great tournament.
Yeah.
Up until a certain point, which we'll get into it in a second. And Brazil had been largely unchallenged.
But also... It wasn't a vintage Brazil team. It wasn't free-flowing attacking football. This Brazil is probably the worst Brazilian team to win a World Cup.
You got Romario and Bebeto. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Really, you got Cafu and Taffarel and other names, but like not...
And Cafu wasn't the player he would become.
No. I mean, in fairness, he came on as a sub a lot in this World Cup. Right. So he wasn't like the Cafu that you and I would know from 02 or whatever. He played till like... last year, didn't he?
Yeah, pretty much. He was much like his young protege, Dani Alves, still, who is like 39 and cropping up in the Brazilian league. Yeah, Cafu was. He was one of that generation where AC Milan were like, you don't need kids to win. We'll have every player over the age of 34. Where Milan's like
as
average
a transfer
age.
Policy. Yeah.
It was almost like, oh, well, you've been told by your physios that your legs are knackered. Nah, one more year in the Italian sunshine.
Exactly. So Brazil's path was relatively smooth in the sense that they had not trailed for 270 minutes of knockout football.
Wow.
Which is quite impressive. Yeah. So they, ghosted through the group stage. Then they defeated the Netherlands in the quarters, Sweden in the semis after they had knocked out the hosts for the largest televised game of the World Cup.
I mean, I'm sure USA would have liked an easier opponent, but if you're going to go out, you want Brazil in a World Cup. That's got the romance to it.
They did.
They
only went up 1-0, mind.
Is that right?
Yeah, they put up a bit of a fight.
Yeah.
Romario scored the only goal of the game, and ultimately Brazil didn't go behind with USA, didn't go behind Netherlands, didn't go behind with Sweden, and made the final. Kind of like era Brazil, anybody going to touch them. The Italians, meanwhile, made hard work of reaching the final, almost in total contrast. During the group stage, Italy struggled and narrowly advanced the next round. Do you remember them losing to Republic of Ireland?
I don't, but it goes to prove the point of USA 94 being a bit forgettable, but no, I don't remember.
I mean, when Ray Houghton scores the only goal against you, it was a great goal, in fairness, although the keeper was questionable, but Ireland beat Italy. That put Italy in trouble. They scraped and scrapped their way through the group stage. And then we come into the last 16. So Roberto Baggio, as I mentioned, was Ballon d'Or holder and was expected to be one of the stars of the tournament, had just not turned up at all in the group stage. Right. Played all the games, but just didn't turn up at all. So during the round of 16 game against Nigeria, Italy were trailing 1-0 in the dying minutes against debutant Nigeria.
Yeah, yeah.
Baggio, from nowhere, scored the equaliser, forcing the game into extra time. He then scored again with a penalty to send Italy through to the quarterfinals. Baggio then basically carried the Italians from there on in.
The divine ponytail. It's where the folklore, I guess, begins, though, doesn't it? Obviously, he'd had an incredible, incredible year because he was a Ballon d'Or
winner. Of course, yeah.
But yeah, the idea of in your big matches, you need your big players to step up. And
is it
he did and he didn't.
Well, he did in this. I was just about to say that. Isn't that interesting how history can change in a moment? So get this, he carried the Italians. He scored the two goals against Nigeria to get them through when they were literally about to go out. He scored the only goal in the quarterfinal against Spain. He then scored both goals in the semi-final against Bulgaria. So he has got them to the final.
Single-handedly. It's very much a Maradona-esque performance.
It really is. And yet for one moment, which we'll cover in a second, history tells you that Baggio was a letdown in 94. He cost them the World Cup.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy?
And they wouldn't have even been in the final were it not for him.
No.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he looks back on 94 and goes, wow, that World Cup was a bomb out.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because like Baggio's name comes up a lot because of, I know it sounds silly, but because of the ponytail and obviously this great World Cup. But Ballon d'Or winner, like played for some of the best clubs at their peak moments in world football. Yeah. But really, nobody talks about Baggio anymore in terms of when people talk about great strikers.
No, not even in the conversation.
He doesn't get brought up in the top 20, really.
No. And if this had turned out differently and he'd taken the winning penalty,
would
history he now have tell you that, you know, top 20 because he won Italy a World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Canonised Saint Baggio.
Yeah, that's it. So with that, Italy got there, Brazil got there, and we will head to the match.
Four added minutes. And Gerrard! Stunning!
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that, take a bow. You have been immense.
Brazil had previously beaten Italy, as we mentioned, in the 1970 final, marking the 94 final as the second time that the same teams had met in two different World Cup finals after last week's Argentina-West Germany. Unfortunately, much like the 1990 final following the great game in 86, this didn't live up to the expectations that the other game had set up.
Dour.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
This is probably the worst World Cup final.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that can compete with it because nothing happens other than the dramatic kind of ending.
Yeah.
And again, when it's known for one moment out of an entire final, it's not like, oh, and then that happened and that happened and that happened and then it culminated in the penalty. It's like, no.
Just certainly from what history tells you point of view, there are, we'll pull out a few bits. There is an interesting thing that happens in the second half around the two stars of the game. But ultimately, you're clutching at straws. It was the only World Cup final that finished 0-0. To this day, like obviously West Germany Argentina last week was close, but this
Spain Holland won in extra time,
and in fairness this was obviously through extra time as well and then went to penalties, the first World Cup final to be decided by penalties. So we'll pluck out what did happen, but I'm gonna be honest, there's not a lot.
No. Ultimately. So listeners, thanks very much for joining us on this episode.
It was Baggio did something stupid at the end.
No, go for Addy.
So we have Brazil's Mazinho was booked in the fourth minute for a foul on Nicola Berti, setting the tone for ultimately a pretty, we're just going to, chop down any creativity or attacking play. Unfortunately, what happened in 1970, where the two attacking teams went, hell for leather at each other, that's not what happened here. So Mazinho was booked in the fourth minute, not a great start for him. In the 13th minute, Romário had a chance. So Romário, we haven't actually mentioned it, obviously you and I know, but Romário was the star of the Brazil team. Great player.
Mr. Thousand Goals, as he likes to claim.
Yeah.
With a huge asterisk.
He was a brilliant player, in fairness to him. Played for Barcelona. So he was superb. So Romário versus Baggio was kind of the headline, if you like. He had a chance to score, should have scored, with a header from close range following across from Dunga, the Brazilian captain, but his header went straight into the goalkeeper's arms. Italy then had one of the best chances of the game when Massaro beat two defenders and was one-on-one with Taffarel, but his shot was directed straight at the Brazilian goalkeeper. So late in the first half, Brazil had a further two opportunities. First from Romário, whose shot was parried without falling to a Brazilian player, and then through Branco, whose free kick was saved. But ultimately, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really, you know, kind of watching the highlights going, can I mention that? It's not really a chance.
No, but it's a reason it goes to extra time and then penalties. Like, just...
Yeah, but some games are all right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, some nil-nils are okay.
Yeah.
It's like, it just, it makes you kind of go, what were you doing for 90 minutes? It's just, it's, yeah.
It's really the definition of a ball draw.
Really was, yeah. So in the second half, Baggio had a chance for Italy when he received a pass from Dino Baggio. Is that a relation?
I'm going to say no.
No, I don't think it
was. And then I will edit this out if I'm wrong. So listeners, you're either listening to this now and getting a snippet.
So Baggio was able to run at the Brazilian goal, but Santos tackled and kicked the ball out for a corner, ending his run. Silva then attended a topspin shot. I don't even know what that meant, but I thought it was interesting that that got written up that way. A topspin shot. Sounds like
it's like Ronnie O'Sullivan stepping up.
Yeah, that's right. After he kicked it, he carried on moving.
Yeah, and then...
Little snooker reference there.
He decided to play with his weaker foot just to keep things interesting.
Ah, he's amphibious.
That joke will never get old.
But anyway, Silva's shot bounced off the post and came and went out for a goal kick. Other than that, the second half was largely devoid of chances, other than two things that happened right at the start of extra time. This is really interesting. I mean, it's not, but we're going to make it interesting because it's 0-0. So the chances for the two superstars of the game, Roberto Baggio, who'd been largely quiet for most of the game, having picked up an injury earlier in the tournament, which was interesting. So he played through an injury since the Nigeria game. He had his only sight of goal in the entire game, hitting a shot from around 25 yards for Tafarel to push the shot over. Obviously, the crowd went nuts for that. In the second half of extra time, Romario missed a golden chance to hand Brazil the trophy as Cafu...
Yes, a young Cafu rampaging Cafu down the right.
Had found him inside the six-yard box with the Italian keeper at least 4 or 5 yards away from him on the other side of the goal, and the entire goal to aim at, the off-balance Romario somehow put his shot wide of the post.
Oh, no way. He would have loved to have had his name in lights as well,
exactly,
Romario.
Exactly, yeah. So it's one of those moments again. So anyway, this final went to penalties, and history tells you this is all that really happened was this penalty shootout.
Yeah.
Because as you can tell from that report, there wasn't a lot else going on. But the penalties, because of what happened and because of who hit the missed penalty, made headlines all around the world. It was the first time, as we've said, the World Cup would be decided on penalties. I forgot this. The Italian captain, Franco Baresi, who I used to pretend to be when I played in defence.
That's good. If you're going to be anyone, though, what a player.
What a player. He took the first penalty and blazed his penalty over the bar.
Did he?
Yeah.
I have no memory of that whatsoever.
I've forgotten it completely. The Brazilian centre-back Marcio Santos went next, but the keeper saved it, and the Brazilian defender's effort low to his right was parried away. So the first two penalties were missed.
No
Completely
way.
Forget that.
Yeah.
With the next four all scoring, Dunga stepped up to score, captain. Of course he did. Yep. And then Massaro saw his saved by Tafarel, leaving Roberto Baggio, the Ballon d'Or holder, FIFA Player of the Year, walking forward with the weight on his shoulders. If he missed, Italy would lose. And infamously, he blazed his penalty over the bar and, like, skied it.
I was just about to say, there's misses, and then there are misses.
Yeah.
So the pendulum has swung wildly against Italy now. Roberto Baggio, the saviour of Italy. Throughout this tournament, he's missed it, and Brazil win the World Cup. Baggio stays rooted to the spot.
Like, it's the kind of video that would go viral today, and you'd have people taking photos of footballs in their back garden being like, just got Baggio's penalty down from orbit, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It is... atrociously bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what is crushing is, from memory, you'll correct me, but I think Baggio just, he doesn't collapse, does he? He just stands still, completely still, hands on hips.
It's happened.
And
that's the image.
Yeah.
That's the image you remember from this World Cup. Him, you're right, hands on hips, I can see it. Hands on hips, just looking down.
Absolutely heartbreaking. You see Tafarel like a lunatic, just like running off with the Brazilian team, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely... It is heartbreaking, really, for a guy that, well, like you said, played through an injury, got his team single-handedly to the final, managed to keep them in it, and then for him to be the kind of poster boy for it falling apart. Exactly. Sad.
If I was a coach of an international team, I'd be like, best player, best penalty taker takes the first penalty.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you mentioned that Italy and Brazil missed their first penalties.
Yeah.
So what if Baggio takes it first? He's a bit more confident, not as much pressure. He scores. Does that then give Italy the confidence? Yeah. We're 1-0 up here after the first two penalties. And suddenly it all changes.
Yeah. So, yeah, there we go. But ultimately, the divine ponytail blazed his penalty over the bar and Brazil were World Cup champions again. And we head to our extra time.
Well, you have just witnessed 90 of the most gripping minutes of European football you will ever, ever see. But the good news is there's more to come.
So Brazil were World Cup champions again. That victory made them the first nation to win four titles, which saw them overtake Argentina and Germany, which I hadn't really thought about the fact that they were level until that point. Obviously, they've gone on to win their fifth title since, I think they're at five, so they're still in front. Interestingly, Brazil's 11 goals in their seven games for this World Cup was a record for the lowest average goals scored per game for any World Cup winning side.
Which is what I said at the start of them, even though they weren't particularly troubled by their opponents, they weren't free scoring. This wasn't a vintage Brazil side where it was like, oh, they've won 3-0, 4-0, 4-1. It's like, no, they were just workmanlike almost in terms of just getting the results they needed to get through to that final.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because the image you have in your head is Baggio missing, not Brazil holding the cup. Dunga, was it?
Yeah, it would have been, yeah.
I don't have any image in my head of the Brazil team like celebrating or whatnot.
Which is interesting because you obviously asked me, you were like, oh, when did Italy last play Brazil? Now, obviously, I've spoken of my love for the 1970 Brazil team.
Yeah.
But again, that is a final that is defined by Brazil were unstoppable and the opponents were irrelevant. It didn't matter who they were against.
They really were, yeah.
It is just Brazil 1970 is the story of Brazil doing what they wanted in 90 minutes of football. The opponents could have been anybody.
Yeah.
Whereas this time it's like, oh, okay, they were kind of stifled and it wasn't their best round. And it wasn't about Brazil being victorious. It was more about, Italy losing it.
Totally agree. So, Brazil, lowest average until, can you tell me who beat that record?
Spain?
Very good.
Yeah.
Spain's eight goals to win, I mean, they didn't win seven matches, but in seven matches in 2010 was the worst average goals per game to win a World Cup, which is strange because you do think of Spain as an attacking team.
And I'll tell you why. It's because it was a period of dominance because they won the three tournaments in a row, which I don't think any other team's ever done.
No, but the Euros, they were far more emphatic.
Exactly,
they?
But I think they lost their opening game and then they just won like 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. Like they were just, because this was kind of the height of tiki-taka or whatever you want to call it, they had so much possession, teams just didn't...
You had three chances
in 90 minutes to try and score, and if you didn't, that was that. You were going to lose.
Just
phenomenal. But you're right, you don't think of them as a really negative, like Greece-like of team.
But ultimately they were.
Yeah, exactly.
In that World Cup. Yeah. It's strange. The tournament's golden boot for 1994 went jointly to Bulgaria Stoichkov, who we mentioned earlier, had a good World Cup. And then, do you remember who else?
Stoichkov's the only one I know.
Oleg Salenko of Russia. Now, what was interesting about him? Do you know?
Didn't he score like four in a game? Or
he
something?
Scored five in a
five
game.
Five in a game.
So they Stoichkov and Salenko won the golden boot with six goals. Salenko got five of them against Cameroon in a 6-1 victory.
I mean,
it doesn't feel right, does it?
We know who won the real quiz. He chucked a kettle over a pub. What have you ever done?
Thing. If you can throw it over, we've won the champagne, and that's it, and that's the real quiz. That was the real quiz. So choose one thing.
Double quiz. You really are a couple of sad little men, aren't you?
Yeah, sad little men. He's thrown a kettle over a pub. What have you done?
The 1994 World Cup final was the first and to date only goalless final in World Cup history. It was also the first to be decided by a penalty shootout. Can you name the other two since?
2006 was France Italy, wasn't it? Penalties. Yeah, very okay, good. So 2006.
Very good.
Oh, France, Argentina, 2022.
Very good, very good. So with Brazil going home as champions, they dedicated their win to Ayrton Senna, who had died only 2 months before this tournament.
Oh, no way.
I didn't realise it was that close.
Yeah.
So they dedicated their win to Ayrton Senna. The next World Cup would be in France, who hadn't qualified for the last two World Cups and were in a mess.
Yeah.
This is great, and we'll leave you with this. However, just under a month after the World Cup in the USA, a young player made his international debut against Czech Republic. With France 2-0 down, a Zinedine Zidane came on and scored twice as France rescued a draw. In 4 years' time, Zidane would also score twice and change French football forever.
Oh, stop it, Ali Max. I tell you what, you need to be putting yourselves out there for film trailers. I am absolutely riveted by that. So join us next week as we talk Zinedine Zidane and R9 Ronaldo.